A look at Silicon Valley's very own banking crisis. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. Hard to believe it's already been a year, but this week marks the first anniversary of the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, the largest bank failure in the U.S. since the 2008 financial crisis. SVB wasn't just Silicon Valley Bank, it was actually where Silicon Valley banked. Today, we're revisiting the SVB collapse with one of the foremost experts on bank failures. Anat Admati is a professor of economics at Stanford and co-author of the book, The Banker's New Clothes. She says the moment that marked the beginning of the end for SVB was when the bank announced it needed to raise $2 billion in equity, otherwise known as stock, to improve its financial position days before.
By the time the bank couldn't raise equity, there was no doubt at all that the bank is what's called insolvent or a zombie, a living dead, that it hasn't defaulted yet on anybody, but it's unable to pay its debt, including deposits. And the depositors, the clever people from Silicon Valley, figured out this bank is bust. Their deposits are above the deposit insurance limit, and they wanted the money out. And all of a sudden, because nowadays we have media and mobile app, you know, $42 billion run on the bank on this Thursday, March 9th, 2023. And at that point, it was clear the bank was insolvent. Everybody wanted their money out, and the FDIC stepped in. The FDIC created this other bridge bank. The FDIC announced on Friday, the 10th of March, that they're taking over the bank. And the announcement at the time said insured deposits, meaning $250,000 per depositor, will have immediate access to their funds on Monday. Uninsured depositors, we'll let you know. Now, all hell broke loose. At that time, all of a sudden, it was like, oh, well, I mean, you know, you got to give me back my money.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of how regulators handled the aftermath of the Silicon Valley collapse? It wasn't just them, of course. You know, there was real concern that this could trigger a much bigger financial collapse. That didn't happen.
On March 12th, 2023, we had an announcement that came in the afternoon from the Federal Reserve, Treasury Department, and the FDIC. And the announcement had multiple parts to it. One part was, okay, you didn't sleep last night, go to sleep this night because everybody will get access to their money right away. The FDIC will insure everybody. And then it'll figure out how to collect that money from other banks. The Federal Reserve announced that it was going to start extra and additional new lending programs, which for a year, which are just also about to end, supposedly, we'll see, that would make loans to all the banks with the unusual feature that the Federal Reserve, as a lender of last resort, becomes actually a very friendly lender that overvalues the assets of the banks because it takes as collateral the assets at their original value and not at their reduced value. In other words, you have a treasury security that's now worth a lot less than you paid for it. We're going to lend you basically up to what it was worth when you bought it. So that's as if you borrowed $1 million because you paid $1 million from a bank, or you pay as if your value of your house is $1 million, even though your value of your house is now a lot less. And that means that you're more likely to default on that loan because you kind of overboard.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Marketplace Tech. I'm Lily Jamali. We're back with Anat Admati, finance and economics professor at Stanford University. I wonder, Anat, if you can talk a little bit about the role that SVB played in the startup ecosystem in Silicon Valley and elsewhere. Was there something about that role that made it particularly susceptible to this kind of financial trouble?
So Silicon Valley Bank started here and wanted to be part of Silicon Valley. That's why it took this name. And it immersed itself in this community of innovation and wanted to be their bank. It always supposedly threw a lot of parties, and their executives wanted to be part of this milieu, even though banking is not the way usually innovators fund themselves, but here is this bank that understands their needs and they're going to hang together and innovate together. And when during COVID, there was just a flood of deposits because there was just zero interest rates and there was a lot of money slushing around. And so the amount of deposits really, really grew. And then and the amounts were really astronomical. So then the deposit base was very small relative to other banks, even of its size. But many of them had really huge deposits there. Like apparently the average deposit size was $4 million. Here they were reckless because maybe it's in the culture, you know, to be taking risk. And banks are usually not supposed to be, you know, casinos. But certainly in the environment here, you know, the bank did not show prudence. That's for sure.
Well, you know, can you give listeners a sense of what the lesson is to be learned as we look back a year later on everything that happened here?
The lesson is that the banking system remains incredibly fragile. And the lesson is that they keep hiding it from all of us. So this is not over. They just kicked the can down the road and they did not really address the weakness of many banks still. They just kept lending to them. And this is still a potential problem coming up. So it's not like it's over. I don't think we should feel that, you know, it's really over just because people don't talk about it. They don't talk about it until they suddenly do talk about something.
That was Anat Admati at Stanford. It is kind of remarkable how big of a story this was around this time last year. And then it just went away. We expect many retrospectives to circulate on this first anniversary. We have an explainer on the specific kind of risk that got SVB into trouble. It's known as duration risk, and it became a big problem when the Fed started hiking rates at the fastest pace in modern history. The fallout from the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank is far from resolved a year later. It was acquired by First Citizens, which claims now that executives at HSBC Holdings greenlit a plan to steal employees and confidential information from SVB when it failed. First Citizens alleges those resources went into creating a competing venture capital business now housed at HSBC. That's a claim HSBC denies. We've posted more on that at marketplacetech.org. Rosie Hughes produced this episode. I'm Lily Jamali, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.